Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, January the 18th. Lots to get into today because there are some interesting events or things that are happening that we want to get into. Let me begin with Governor Youngkin of Virginia. Now, for some of you who may not be familiar with this name, this is the gentleman who was elected in November, a couple of months ago, Governor of Virginia. This was the big election that was pretty much the table for this election was set over education, where you had a lot of parents who were angry with the school boards, angry with the school districts, angry with the teachers' union. And Youngkin was elected in a really, it was a fascinating coalition because a lot of Democrats voted for him. A lot of Hispanics voted for him. So he was elected, very successfully elected, Governor of Virginia. And now, of course, he just took over a few days ago. And he was on television on Sunday. I saw him being interviewed. I saw him in Fox News. I don't know if he did all the Sunday shows. Sometimes they do. They do all the Sunday shows at the same time. But anyway, he was on Fox News Sunday. And I thought he was really an effective communicator. He was talking about what he's going to do, what's happening there. And I thought he was a very effective communicator. He comes across extremely well. He comes across as a man who, you know, I can see, frankly, when I see his demeanor and when I see the way he speaks, I can understand why so many parents voted for him, because he comes across as a man who's not only very competent, he was a successful businessman before he ran for governor. But he comes across as a good man. He comes across as a good guy. So I can understand now why the parents in Virginia voted for him. But now we got to look to the future, and I am beginning to see in Governor Youngkin a potential place in the Republican ticket in 2024. Now, maybe it's a little bit too soon to talk about presidential aspirations. Maybe. I don't know. But I don't think it's too soon at all to talk about vice presidential aspirations. I can see a ticket in 2024 that includes Governor Youngkin. Now, what's going to happen in 2024? Well, your guess is as good as mine. More than likely, Governor or President Trump is going to try to run again in 2024. That certainly, if you look at the political panorama right now, if you look at the political map, as they say, or the landscape, whatever word you want to use, there's no question that President Trump leads the way. He's number one when it comes to the nomination, but that doesn't mean it's going to be that way in 2 years or whatever. But even if you go with President Trump, Youngkin would make a fantastic vice presidential selection to go with Trump, because Youngkin is connected to an issue that is really resonating with the American people, and that is the issue of public education, the whole question of school choice. I think a lot of parents are looking at what they are paying for public education and saying, we're not getting our money's worth. And frankly, it's not just the parents who are saying that. You look at the results of public education in some of our cities. You know, I wrote a post, I guess about a week or so ago, about what was happening in Baltimore. In Baltimore, where they're graduating people, young people who cannot even read. They're graduating from high school with GPAs under one. There was a young man who graduated, by the way, he's number 62 in his class. And he graduated with a GPA under one. And that, I guess there's another 60 people in his class with even lower GPA. But, you know, we're graduating these young people. We're putting them in the workforce. They cannot read. They cannot take on a basic job, because any job you take, you're going to have some reading skills. I mean, if you become an Uber driver, you've got to be able to read the app. If you become a gas station attendant, you've got to be able to do the job. So, I mean, our schools are graduating people who are not prepared for the international economy, the competitive international economy that we're operating in. I should say our public schools in many places. So a lot of the opposition to public education is not necessarily coming from the parents who are paying the taxes, but also from, honestly, a lot of people like myself who are looking at the results of public education and saying, we can do a heck of a lot better. And by the way, let me just say something very important. This is not a criticism of teachers. I think a lot of teachers in many of these public school districts have been put in an impossible situation where they have to pass students, where they have to deal with discipline problems in their classrooms that are just absolutely beyond reason. And so I'm not really faulting the teachers here. I'm not saying that there aren't bad teachers, but I don't think that's a problem. I think if many of these teachers had a different environment to teach, or certainly a different leadership who was expecting different results, not just from them, but from the kids, I think there would be a lot better future, frankly, for many of these public schools. But anyway, back to Youngkin. Youngkin is at the forefront of this, at the forefront of this movement. And I think that puts him in a perfect position either to be a vice president to President Trump in 2024, or to be on a ticket with whoever the other Republican is. It could be Governor DeSantis of Florida, for example, who I'm beginning to like a lot as a potential nominee. So you could have a DeSantis-Youngkin ticket. I think that would be really good. A couple of relatively young men running for president who I think have a lot to offer the country. So keep an eye on Governor Youngkin of Virginia. I really believe very seriously that is a man with presidential future, either as vice president or as president. But I think Youngkin has a future. I really do. I think he has a great future in American politics. Now, of course, he's going to have to succeed in Virginia, obviously, but I'm pretty sure that he will, because he's got a lot of support there from the parents. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Let's move on to another very important point going around, and that is the Texas abortion law. You may remember that back on September 1st, Governor Abbott signed the Texas abortion law, which basically means that you cannot have an abortion if there is a heartbeat. So when the doctor goes in to detect, or you go in to a clinic to have an abortion, the doctor first of all, has to check and see if there's a heartbeat from the baby. If there is a heartbeat, you cannot have an abortion. And that, of course, has gone through several federal courts. It always comes back to Texas. Well, the latest maneuver is that it went to a federal appeals court, and that federal appeals court sent it back to Texas, where I guess it will eventually go to the Texas Supreme Court. Now, I'm not one of those that likes to project what a Supreme Court's going to do, but my sense is that the Texas Supreme Court is going to say, you know what, this is what the people of Texas voted for, and if you want to change it, do it through the legislature, and they will keep the Texas abortion law on the books. So I think, you know, the fact that the federal court, the appeals court, sent it back to Texas is a pretty good sign that this particular law is going to be around for the indefinitely. Now, the other big thing, of course, with respect to abortion is that there is a case from Mississippi in front of the Supreme Court right now. They should be writing an opinion on that one next June, which is when they write opinions, or they publish the opinions. My gut feeling, and I've said it many times, is that The Supreme Court will say that states have the right to regulate abortion, and that, of course, will change the entire abortion landscape in the United States. Some states will come up with their own version of Roe v. Wade. Other states like Texas will do what we did in Mississippi and so on. But I think that's the way the Supreme Court is going to come down next June. They're going to say that states have the right to regulate abortion. So that's how I see that going. You know, we keep hearing some bad news. Here's some bad news. Oil prices have hit a 7-year high. So the last time we had oil prices like this would have been 2014. What does that mean when oil prices hit a 7-year high? Well, it means your price of gasoline is not dropping anytime soon. Now, how do you fight high oil prices? You fight it with supply. You fight it by increasing supply, which is what we had done under President Trump. So, you know, oil prices go up for a lot of reasons. A lot of it is geopolitical issues like what's happening in Ukraine, what could happen in Taiwan, what's happening with Iran. But the way you protect yourself against these geopolitical issues is by having your own supply of oil that is not impacted by what happens in other countries. Well, I got to hand it to the Democrats. The way they're going after Senator Manchin and Senator Sinema with respect to the filibuster, both of those senators have said, we're not going to change the filibuster, so the filibuster stays. And of course, why that becomes relevant, because the Democrats want to pass what they call voting rights, but they don't have the 60 votes to do it. They've got, you know, they've got 50 Democrats, but they don't have 50 votes. So they don't have the 60 votes to do this. They're not going to get any Republicans to go along with it. So as a consequence, it'll never survive the filibuster. And the Democrats have really taken, I mean, the attacks on Manchin and the attacks on Sinema, I think that's how you say it, have been absolutely horrific. I mean, the things they're saying about Manchin, the things they're saying about Sinema, and by the way, as we have mentioned before, they're not the only two who want to keep the filibusters. There's others. They're just not saying it publicly because they're afraid of the kind of reaction they're going to get from the crazy left wing. But Manchin and Sinema are not the only two. And I believe this is going to be put up to a vote in the Senate sometime. That's what I hear. That is a vote on whether or not to change the filibuster. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if several Democrats say no. The filibuster is a controversial thing. The majority party always hates it because obviously it means they have to get 60 votes to do anything. But in principle, it's a good idea because it forces compromise of some nature. And if you want to do something big, you have to have people from the other party. You cannot do big time legislation on a purely straight party vote. That is not a good idea for the country. And what you always end up getting is some very bad legislation, like Obamacare, for example, is a good example of that. That was basically a one-party vote. And look, we got a very bad piece of legislation out of that called Obamacare. Had there been a better way of doing it, had there been a better compromise, and there would have been a compromise, I think we would have gotten a much better law than Obamacare. And that's just the way it is. So that's why the filibuster is around. That's the idea of the filibuster. Well, I want us to go back in history just a tiny bit today and celebrate Bobby Goldsboro. Bobby Goldsboro turned 81 today. Happy number 81. Now, if you're from my generation, you probably remember the songs that he wrote and sang. But his biggest hit was from the spring of 1968. It was a song called Honey that I think in many ways has become his signature song. An absolutely tearjerker of a song about a young woman who dies, but it's just a great song, and it certainly sold millions of copies and made Bobby Goldsboro, I guess, a fixture in Top 40 radio. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.